Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Anne and Peter Haig, and we're going to take you through some wonderful adventures we had, eating adventures in London.
Well, we started London last week, of course.
Right.
So, but there was a lot to catch up with, which we caught up with in due course. And today's program has an interesting complexion.
Why?
Because it turns out our first guest, a restaurant called Launceston Place, the chef spent 3 years at an iconic London restaurant called Le Gavroche, but subsequently went on to discover, I guess, for the first time, his own style of cooking, which he calls unavowedly modern British. But not to be outdone, of course, we decided, well, Le Gavroche is a place we must go, because everybody says you must go there. Chefs say they must go there, and diners who go to London know you must go there. So we ventured there, and we found, indeed, a very strongly French kitchen.
A classically French kitchen in the middle of London,
yeah,
right?
Stubbornly saying this is the way it should be done.
Exactly.
If you like
bring
it.
Bring on the cream, bring
yeah.
on the butter.
Yeah, if you like it here, come. If you don't like it, go somewhere else.
Great.
And then an establishment which classes itself as London's oldest French restaurant, dating back to 1942, where we had the chance to talk to a chef who's been there only the last 7 or 8 years.
And also the amazing owner.
Yeah, who bought the property in 1972. So that's what's coming your way today. So it's modern British, but with its feet in French, followed by a lot of very traditional French. And I'm sure you'll enjoy our conversation. First up is Tristan Welch, W-E-L-C-H, not his nationality, his name. And he's the chef and co-owner of Launceston Place, where he's been for...
Nice guy, too.
Yeah, really nice guy. We had an excellent time.
I'm
sure you'll enjoy the conversation, and you missed out, because it was a wonderful meal, too.
Tristan Welch. I'm going to throw one at you because you have a cold. I want to know, what is that you're drinking?
It's actually Lem Sip. I've got a cold, yeah. I'm a bit stuffy today.
What is Lem Sip? Oh, it doesn't sound very...
It's like vitamin C, paracetamol, all in a drink. It's not very nice, if I'm honest.
Oh, it doesn't taste good even, but it's going to make you better.
I hope so, yeah, because okay. I've got a serious case of man flu. You know, do you have man flu over in the States? It's the same as any other flu, but... When guys get it, it's twice as worse.
Your wife probably told you that.
Yeah, oh yes.
Anyhow, here we are at Launceston Place, Kensington, and been here a long time, has it not?
Yeah, I mean, Launceston Place has been steeped in history before the war, before both wars, actually, both world wars. It was an Italian restaurant, started off as a tea room, and then another little Italian restaurant, and then it expanded, and it went back to something like the Ivy was, or still is.
So
very buzzy, like that. And now it's Launceston Place, and it's mine.
Okay, so this is your place.
Yeah. Well, I'm in partnership with D&D London.
That's how you get to relaunch it. You've restructured the whole place to be not any of what it was before, but mod British.
Yeah, modern British. I mean, that's very important to me as a chef, as somebody who wants to champion British ingredients, really, is to make this a modern British mecca, if you like. We take the best of what we have in the world of British produce and showcase it here on our menu.
And how big is this place? It has little rooms, so I can't quite tell.
It's really misleading, but it's actually about 20 tables, so we can do about 60 covers, I suppose.
Oh, but that's a nice, comfortable...
Very comfortable, but you haven't seen my kitchen. It's the size of a shoebox.
Oh, yes, so is mine. You've been cooking in a number of places. Could you just touch on a few of them to give some idea of your background, which is really very varied?
Of course. Well, my first job in London was actually, it's quite fitting, really. I worked for Gary Rhodes for a year and a half, and I was part of the team that got the star there at City Rhodes, and then I moved on to Le Gavroche, because I thought all good chefs have been through Le Gavroche. And
right.
I did 3.5 years there, and then Michelle packed me off and sent me over to Paris, and I was working at a 3-star over there called Arpège.
You were at Arpège?
Yep, at Arpège. Did a year and a half there. Then I came back to London with my hands in my pockets.
And
said, Michelle, what do I do now? And firmed up a job for me up in Scotland, the Relian Chateau Hotel up there.
Really?
Glenelg Castle. And that's where I really started to come into my own and learn the style of cuisine I wanted to cook. I was using solely British produce up there and local
really
produce.
Ingredient-driven
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, really ingredient-driven stuff. We had our own kitchen gardens, things like that. So that's when my style came into its own and developed. While I was up there, I won the Gordon Ramsay Scholarship,
uh-huh.
and I came in contact with Gordon and Marcus. They invited me down to London to be head chef at Petrus. Six years later, here I am now at my own restaurant. Now,
were you at Petrus when they had that scandal about the wine?
No, I just started after that. Yeah.
Because we were there just shortly after, and we couldn't get anybody's attention. No service whatsoever, because they were all still reeling from the tip they got from that wine tab.
Oh, really? So you were in the room at the same time? Uh-huh. Wow, unbelievable.
It was just a very short time afterwards, and I have to say, we heard great things about Marcus.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few meals we had in London that didn't live up to the billing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean...
Service was awful.
Maybe he had a night off, something like that. Maybe you weren't there yet.
I wasn't working there. You missed me in my heyday back then, I'm afraid. No, I was head chef when it was at the Berkeley Square.
Okay, so it already moved.
So it already moved.
And, it's there still.
Now Marcus is still there, but Petrus has moved on. Gordon's relaunched it.
Oh, so, okay, right. So the Petrus name is gone, and Marcus Waring at the Berkeley.
At the Berkeley, yeah.
Okay, so anyhow, you ended up here.
Yep.
Because you wanted to make your own mark.
Hey, of course you do. Yeah, definitely. You know, there comes a time when you think, right, I want to crack at this myself. So you roll up your sleeves and you find the suitable place, and this is home, and this is where I put my name to.
And how long did you say you've been here?
3 years now.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And what have you found the most difficult about it as opposed to working for other people?
Well, for instance, say if the Hoover breaks down.
You're
it's Muggins here that has to run down this road and get another one. You know, that's the complete difference.
Now you're not familiar with the term Joe Muggins, but no. Joe Muggins says it's me, I have to fix it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Joe Muggins is a Cockney.
I reckon it is, yes, it's an English saying.
I think Joe Muggins was a Yorkshireman too.
Yeah, probably.
But Muggins always got to fix it. That meant you had to fix
the
it
dog's
yourself.
The dog's body, in other words, yeah.
It's like, no.
Oh, is that another one? The
it's like
dog's body?
A general dog's body is an English expression.
Yeah. What is the what?
A general dog's body is someone who gets to do absolutely everything. And that's like taking a ride on Shank's pony.
Oh, please.
That sounds rude.
Just in case you're wondering, that's walking.
Oh.
Okay.
That's not right. Cockney rhyming slang. That's simply taking a ride on Shank's pony.
If you say that
pony.
In my kitchen, they'll think you're saying something else.
Okay, so here we are now, and who comes here? I mean, who are you trying to lure in here? What kind of diners?
So we've got a fantastic blend of destination diners. However, they haven't always been here. We've got a good, strong local clientele as well. There's a lot of journalists as well come in for lunch and early dinners as well, because we've got the Independent and the Daily Mail just up the road.
Oh, okay. Now,
we're just a stone's throw away from Kensington High Street, right?
In Pittsburgh.
No, right here.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Right,
sorry.
We're down a little side alley called Launceston Place, but it's just a stone's throw from Kensington
High Street. It's a stone's throw from Kensington High Street, yeah.
Now, if somebody's going to arrive here, what kind of food are they going to expect? We already said modern English and ingredient-driven, but could you pick out and discuss some of the items on your menu here?
Absolutely. Well, one of my signature dishes, which really speaks about my style and what we try to do here at Launceston Place, is the scallops, and it's probably one of our best sellers as well. People come to this restaurant just for that.
So scallops?
Yeah, I mean, they're so simply cooked as well. They get sent down on the train overnight from the west coast of Scotland. They arrive on our doorstep first thing in the morning. Wow. We prep them, they're live and kicking it. They're phenomenal quality. So when you've got something with such high quality, which screams and shouts of the British Isles itself, we don't want to do much to it other than just make it, just, I don't know, just heighten the whole culinary experience for our guests by not masking that fantastic produce. So we just clean them up, leave the scallop attached to the shell, and we cook the scallop in the shell, meat side down and the rounded shell facing up. So that creates its own little steam in there as it's roasting.
Wow.
And not only does it give a fantastic flavour, but a fantastic aroma to the scallop as well. Perfect cooking, because the residual heat goes right through the shell and cooks the scallop from the back side and from the front side that's facing the pan. Anyway, but there's a lot of steam in there and stuff, so there's a nice lot of caramelisation in the bottom of the pan, and we deglaze that with some stock we've made from the other bits and bobs around the outside of the scallop. Again, adding phenomenal flavour to that sauce. And then, because there's so much natural sugar in scallops anyway.
Yes.
So it's a beautiful sweet sauce. We put a little bit of white wine just to give it a touch of acidity and finish it off with wild herbs from the coastline. So it's got a real beautiful clean flavour of the sea with the sweetness of the scallops coming through, and served just simply like that.
That sounds good. I hope we're getting to try that tonight.
I reckon we could squeeze one or two out for you.
Okay. What else here? You have Herdwick lamb.
Now that is a beautiful piece of meat.
This is Lake District, right?
Yep, it's Lake District. Yep, yeah, you're familiar with that already. I see. Fantastic.
Well, no, they have a big stand at the Borough Market.
Right, yeah, they do.
I think
it's
the guys. Guys who wear the bowler hats and the old and the old butcher uniforms.
Oh, is that who those are?
Yeah, that's the guys. Yeah, we have several pictures.
The ginger
of
pig,
them.
Isn't it? The ginger pig you've got there.
Well, no, they're right next to the ginger pig.
Yeah, right.
I think
yeah.
they have their own stand. Unless they moved in the last 2 years.
And it's
wild radish.
So the whole idea of this dish is, again, it's another coastline dish, actually. You've got the lamb, which grazes on half salt marsh and half the hillside in the winter. Salt marsh in the summer, hillside in the winter. So it's got a fantastic, saltiness to it. So it's like the French say, agneau pré-salé. So like salt marsh lamb. And one of my ethoses is what goes together grows together.
Okay.
So we look at the surroundings, and if you look where the lamb come from, they grow beautiful epicure potatoes around there because the ground is perfectly suited for epicure. That sort of like Ayrshire potatoes, that like New Jersey potato sort of style, and that's got a fantastic texture. And we salt bake those potatoes, and we serve it with wild radishes, sea purslane,
and sea purslane.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal. It's a phenomenal seaweed, like a sea herb that grows on the coastline, and all those things are reared in such close proximity. The dish kind of created itself, if I'm honest.
Now, you do an a la carte menu, and you also do a fixed price here with the three courses. And then you have over here your tasting menu, which is what, six courses?
Yeah, well, actually, it's a bit more than that. We took in a couple of extras.
I'm sure you do.
That's the six courses as standard, yeah.
But you start out, you have your beef tartare, which is, there's some sort of revival. Every place we go, they have a fabulous beef tartare. It went out of favor for a while over this thing with the raw eggs.
Well,
and now it's back.
Are we tartaring a different animal?
No, well, this is we've got two tartars on the menu. We've got a beef tartare and a venison tartare to start.
So we missed out Bambi. We have to bring Bambi back in again.
Poor old Bambi.
Oh, Bambi.
Well, this is, again, a phenomenal. We have a venison tartare dish on the menu, which is an exceptional dish, I have to say. We take a great quality venison, we hang it for an extra week down here, so it's got that beautiful waxy texture to it. And that, when you've got the meat at that sort of texture, it tartars beautifully. We serve with some classic English flavours this time of year. English mustard, quail's eggs, and walnuts. Beautiful.
There you have it. I'm not a dessert eater, but I've spotted this dark chocolate souffle with my favourite whiskey, Lafroy. Whiskey ice cream.
Oh, you love that. Oh, fantastic.
I love
Lafroy. Well, I mean, you'll love it because it's quite a light chocolatey souffle. And then when you dip the ice cream into the middle of it, that sort of peatiness actually permeates through the chocolate flavour, that light, moussey-like flavour.
I can't even envision that, Lafroy with chocolate. I mean, it's just amazing.
Oh, you should try it.
Yeah. What kind of comments do people make? They're just happy to be here? Are they surprised?
Yeah, well, I think the thing the restaurant's quite grand as itself. So we do set a first impression out that's quite something of quality, let's say. So I think a lot of people come to it, have high expectations when they come here, and we strive to meet them.
What kind of people do you hire for service?
Good people.
I mean, are they English? Are they?
Yeah, we've got some very British people on. A lot of my front of house team I've worked with for a long time at the previous Petrus and things like that.
I found it really interesting, this trip, is that, especially in hotels, the hotels we've been in for breakfast, people don't understand a word I'm saying. Nobody speaks English.
Shocking. It's terrible. Yeah, you have to.
Of course, I know I speak not English, but American.
But you have to be very careful who you employ. I mean, especially out front, it's people who are going to speak about you, about your product. So it's very important. But I do admire the American style of service. I think that's phenomenal. The American attitude to service is something that can be
casual,
but attentive. Very attentive. And just in the back there, sometimes you don't even know they're there, but they're right there if you need them. And that's a wonderful thing that so many people get so wrong. And I think it's a leaf that we can take out of your book.
Now, we actually know a number of chefs who have said the best James Beard awards they ever got, was the one for service.
Mm-hmm.
So the French Laundries won it. Danielle's team won it just a couple of years ago. Maybe it was last year. Gary Danko's team won it.
And they're all proud of that more than
about
anything.
Danny Meyer's teams at various restaurants have won it.
Yeah.
And he always says, this is the award we value the most.
because it means we're all working together as a team, doing a great job. So it's nice for you as a outsider to say, when I'm in America, I see that. Sometimes we get have a feeling that our country is far too democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem in Australia in particular, where the service really don't want to feel subservient serving, so somehow they're more offhand because they're not comfortable with the idea that this is their career.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. That's it. It is a career for them out there, and in the UK, it is a little bit of a struggle for our front of house members, to be honest. But I think it's such a phenomenal career with such great openings. It's something that should be taken a lot more seriously.
Now, you cannot tell us that much. Is there anything you could tell us about Chopped, which recorded in the States?
I can tell you I started at 5 o'clock in the morning in the studios. It's long old day, that one. But it is a full old day.
You probably went straight there from dinner.
Yeah, very close, actually. We only had a couple of days in New York. I can tell you I did it with Jun Tanaka from Pearl. I did it with Lottie Duncan, who's a phenomenal country cook. And I did it with a new talent called Andy...
He's a London chef?
He's a London chef, and he owns a market stall out in Whitechapel Market. Okay. And he does pies and scotch eggs and things like that.
Oh,
phenomenal. Yeah, actually, and when we were out there, he put a market stall up in Brooklyn for the day, just to some advertising for the Food Network. And it went down really well.
So when does this air?
May, I believe.
Not till May. Okay. So you can't tell us the outcome of any of this.
No, I can't tell you anything.
Before we came on the air, you said that there's a group of young chefs in town, and you know a lot of them. You're one of them, like Brett Graham from the Ledbury.
Yep.
Well, who else is in the sort of group that you really like?
It's a funny old group. Say, for instance, as a group of us went foraging at Hampstead Heath a couple of weeks
ago. I love foraging too. You like that?
Yes. Yeah, it's something about it feels like baking your own bread almost. It's something quite hunter-gatherer sort of manly feels like, you know, going foraging. We went to Hampstead Heath, and believe it or not, we found loads of stuff on Hampstead.
What did you find?
Oh, crikey. So we found chickweed, we found pennywort, we found
purslane.
Reeds, yeah. I don't know. Wild garlics, two different types of
wild garlic. We have wild onions in our backyard.
Yeah. I mean, there's just phenomenal out there. But it was myself, Brett, Rennie Rezepi from Noma.
Rene was here.
Yeah, he was here. Shane Osborne from Pied à
Terre.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
I mean, why they don't have 3 stars, I have no idea.
He is so
tremendous. Yeah.
But then they do just as good job at Ledbury, I believe, as well.
Ledbury is also outstanding. We love, incidentally, Le Tropier, the sous chef from Pied à Terre went. Marcus,
well, yeah.
he's a lovely guy too.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah.
So next you're going to go to Copenhagen to forage, are you?
Yeah. I have a Swedish wife, so I go to Copenhagen quite a lot because we fly over.
Oh, you're lucky.
We fly over to Copenhagen, and we'll take the train across to Sweden.
I bet she's ecstatic about this whole thing because we have really good Swedish friends. That, but there's never been any Scandinavian recognition like this.
The Scandinavian culinary scene right now is really exploding.
Hot.
Yeah, it's hot. I mean, Stockholm is becoming...
What is that thing, the Boku store?
They always do. The past 8-10 years, they're always in the top spots. Finland, Sweden, Denmark, always up there. A lot more time in their hands. Not as busy as us, I think.
Yeah,
that's the excuse.
What's the matter with this London contingent?
I know.
The poor USA has tried desperately to get something.
What were we, 10th this year?
10th, yeah.
See, I'm very fortunate. I can claim 3 nationalities.
Oh, really?
So it really depends who's winning.
So it's American, Australian, what's the third one?
I grew up in England.
Ah.
Not only I grew up in England, I'm a Yorkshireman too. So we're the obstinate, snotty lot.
Okay, let's wrap this. Let's give the, spell out the website, would you?
So it's www.launcedandplacerestaurant.com.
There's LAUNCESTONPLACE, and then there's a hyphen, restaurantspelledout.co.uk.
That's the one.
And just in case you're puzzling, Launceston or Launceston is in Cornwall.
Yeah, it's a place in Cornwall.
And there's also a place of the same name in Tasmania.
Okay.
So if you're conjuring up where the hell this name came from, now you know not only where it came from, but also where they copied it.
Yeah.
And they copied it right here too. But we're delighted to be here.
And my Twitter address as well. It's at Tristan Welch.
Okay. It's what?
At Tristan Welch. It's,
I see
it's
it.
My Twitter address.
With a W-E-L-C-H.
Yep, W-E-L-C-H.
Thank you so much for joining us on the menu. We're looking forward to sharing your wonderful menu. Thank you so
it's
much,
my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Get well.
Thank you.
And now stay with us while we take a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we're back, and next stop, we're at, as promised, Le Gavroche, interviewing their executive chef, who is a female. I'm always thrilled to see women in charge of the kitchen.
And you had some conversation with her about that, and news for those of you who don't know, there really are not many women chefs in London, probably not as many as there are in Paris, which is something that I guess over time Anne will undoubtedly work to have corrected. But in the meantime, here's Rachel Humphrey talking about her career and her cooking at Le Gavroche.
We are at an iconic French restaurant in London called Le Gavroche, and we're talking to the chef de cuisine, Rachel Humphrey. Welcome on the menu, Rachel.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, well, now you told me that Gavroche is a character out of Les Misérables.
Yes, that's correct. It's the little street urchin in the play by Victor Hugo, which is still plays in London in the West End. Yeah, that's the little character that we have on it's our little symbol for Gavroche.
Yeah, easy, you have it on your door handle.
Yes, it's one of those easy to remember things, but it's something that sticks in people's minds. It's French, but easy to say. And
it was really taken from the book.
From the book,
rather
yes.
than the musical, which did not yet exist. When
no,
this
is
was
true.
Open.
This is true. From the book.
And I have to say, listeners, early on, unless you know the street address, this is a restaurant you could easily miss.
Yes.
And even knowing the street address, you might miss it. Shall we call it discreet?
Yes, you could easily walk past.
So before we close, we'll come up with some precise directions as to how to get here from somewhere obvious like the USA embassy, which is just around the corner.
Yeah, that's normally the first direction.
Sorry, back to you though.
Yes, well, and we also have these cute little figures, the little figures on flatware. And then you have this, I think it's kind of unusual, you have figures on each table made out of utensils, eating utensils,
yes.
and little animal figures, which then appear to be cast in brass or what?
Yes, the Gérard Bouvier figures, they're all made from cutlery, and yeah, they're all different. There's a selection of different animals on the tables, some obviously small animals for the small tables, and there's some quite large ones in the corners and around and about. And
they're for sale?
They are for sale if you'd like to take them home. But they're nice, something different on the table, something for people to talk about.
Oh, yes. Well, people talk a lot about this restaurant. I mean, it's your chef patron is Michel Roux, which is not a name that would not ring many, many bells for many, many people.
That's correct.
So that's a lineage right there that is hard to miss.
Yes, definitely.
Your menu is classic French, and you were trained at this restaurant.
I was, yes.
Tell us about it.
I came straight from school at 18 and did an apprenticeship system. So trained here at the restaurant and then went to college just for one day a week for the necessary paperwork and the certificates that you need to have. But majority of the training was done here at the restaurant. So give you a hands-on experience straight away.
And you would know exactly how Michel did his things. This is Junior, I might add.
Yes, yes.
You know his techniques, you know his style, you know how his food is supposed to taste. So it's really the holding of a tradition,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely.
How did you get selected?
The letter I wrote must have been very nice. Okay. I just wrote...
But I think you must have known something perhaps about cooking before.
Yes, I was always wanted to be a chef, so I wrote to obviously several places looking for an apprenticeship, and they took me here. So.
And this is already a famous restaurant then.
Indeed, yes.
Being founded by Michel's junior's father, who is Albert.
Albert, and his brother, Michel Senior.
What motivated you to the kitchen, cooking, chefing?
It was the only job I wanted to do since I was probably 8, 10 years old. Cooked at home, cooked with my mom,
So your mum was a good cook?
Mum was a good cook, home cook, but very good cook. My grandmother was a very good cook, so we always had home cooking, and I would watch the programmes. So when I was young, the Roux Brothers were on the TV, that was the time for them, and Tom Osterman, the Roux Brothers, Keith Floyd. It was all the TV in the sort of late 80s was when I was watching TV of cooking programs. So it was all I wanted to do. So I can't really say anything specific.
Well, it's notable that you are head chef of the establishment in London, where it's still, as we understand from other women chefs that we've interviewed, still a male-dominated field, and even more so with the French, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's a very male-dominated environment. There's a few now, and it's more, a few women chefs more, and it's more noticed, as it were. But, yeah, so if you look at the percentage of male to female in most kitchens, even on the junior staff, obviously there's more guys, so they're going to come up and there's going to be more male head chefs.
Well, do you girls get together?
Not really, no.
See, there's strength in numbers.
There is, yes, but...
If I hung around here long enough, I'd get you all organized. I've done that other places.
It's one of those, everybody's working all the hours, and everybody works the same hours and in their respective places. So, yeah, it's something you just go along with.
Well, do you get any leeway at all on your menu? I mean, could you make up your own dishes, or you determine the menu? Too?
Yeah, we do the menu together with there's certain dishes that we don't change, obviously, because
like what? Give us an example.
Souffle suisse, we wouldn't change. Muslin.
That's cheese souffle cooked on double cream.
So wow. that's one that's been on the menu since the beginning of the restaurant. So it's one of the iconic dishes for the restaurant, and if you tried to take it off, people would complain.
Oh, I'm sure.
So there are several that have been on the menu since the beginning, and people expect them. But other things we change, and we do the menu together, and leeway, as it were. Yeah, definitely to change things around.
It's within a framework.
Yeah, I understand and I respect the tradition of the restaurant. So any dishes I do is within that framework, because that's what I'm happy to cook and I enjoy cooking, so it works well.
What single product do you enjoy cooking the most? Meat, fish, veggies, dessert, soup?
I like pastry. I like desserts. When I was in the kitchen, the first section I was on was in the pastry. So I obviously enjoy that. I like cakes, and always did cake decorating when I was younger.
Oh, you do cake decorating, huh?
Yeah, not so much anymore. I don't have the time, but sort of when I was younger, I used to do them at home. So interesting, the pastry, but I love the kitchen as well.
Really serious desserts in this menu. And you make all of your ice creams and sorbets in-house.
Yes, yes.
I always wanted to do that, but because I keep thinking of these wonderful different flavors that I don't make. And you have this a sweet omelet. And now you have a tasting of chocolate and orange that sounds really wicked.
Yes, that's one of the... one we change, obviously, seasonal. So at the moment, say chocolate and orange. Orange and whiskey jelly, chocolate and orange ripple ice cream, little financier cake with oranges, and little souffle. So you have if you wanted a selection dessert, that's quite a popular one.
And then of all these, what's your favorite dessert?
I like the Palais au Chocolat, which is
bitter chocolate and praline indulgence with pure gold leaf. I bet that's pretty.
Yeah, very pretty, and it's a serious chocoholics one. It's
I would say so.
Definitely one.
And you have a full lineup of French cheeses, I'm assuming?
Yeah, French cheese and British cheeses as well, a selection of British cheeses. There's about 30 to 40 different cheeses on the cheese board.
So far we haven't talked about any meat and fish.
No, I know that.
Are you skirting around
that? No, I'm just going back to that.
You're just going back to that, okay.
I was
going
to deal with the wine next, because I'm assuming you probably have mainly French labels, is that true?
Yes, but there's a very heavy influence on the French wine, but then there are New World, Italian, lots of different unusual things as well. Obviously a very vast wine list.
I bet. Is it heavy?
Heavy volume, yes. Good time.
Well, Peter's concerned about the staples here.
I just thought maybe it slipped your mind.
No, I had a question.
I should know better. Nothing ever slips your mind.
I was going to ask you, and to sort of back into this issue, everybody that we've talked to seems to be so much more aware of local produce and produce, fish, more than ever since we've been coming to London.
Yeah.
And I wondered how that has impacted your kitchen.
Yeah, obviously we're very influenced with local. Obviously being in town, it's not like if you're somewhere out in the country where you have real local produce, because obviously there's the mileage to get into sort of regional food. And for example, the things like the fish comes down every day from day boats in sort of off the West Country. So the guy will call me up and say, what was landed and what they've got. So, yeah, I think it's important to understand that and to use that, because obviously
right.
Fresher it is, the closer it is to you, the better it is for everybody.
Have you had a recent revelation of some product locally that you just discovered?
We had some very good Jersey beef from a small supplier, so that we have it on the special at the moment, and ruby red beef as well, specific breeds. Which we run as specials, because obviously the small producers have a limited amount of product, but we try to use as much as we can local things.
This menu, Excepcional, is a tasting menu?
Tasting menu, yes.
Chef's tasting menu.
Yeah.
Pick out a couple of dishes to talk about from there.
We've got the cookie sanchak, which is the pan-fried scallops with squid, with a persillade, so garlic and shallots and parsley, squid ink tapioca, and a parsley coulis.
That's a different take on cookie sanchak.
Yes, yeah, it's a different thing. It's using all the classic elements that go together, the scallops, the parsley, and the squid, obviously, and then a little different take on it for something different and a little bit unusual. A few questions about the tapioca, asking what it was. And
really?
Yeah, because, I mean, people associate it with a pudding, or in the UK they do. tapioca pudding at school.
I think if you're younger than 40 years old, you probably never even saw tapioca. We used to call it frog's bone.
Yes, indeed.
You probably did too.
That's
what it looks like.
Oh, yeah, but it's disgusting. I probably never be able to eat tapioca again.
It is disgusting.
But your lamb comes from the Pyrenees.
Yes, at the moment it's the baby lamb from the Pyrenees, which
and
we always do in this season.
Oh, right. That's one of the two places where they get it in France, isn't there?
Yes.
There's another part. Is it Bordeaux?
Yes.
And the Pyrenees, different seasons of the year.
Yeah. So it's always on just after Christmas for us on the menu.
Well, if you're talking to people who are coming here and you want to tell them one dish that they absolutely should not miss, what would that be?
I think, I mean, for a dish for... that goes with the gavroche, I would say the souffle suisse, obviously, is an iconic dish. It's something that's been on the menu for a very long time and associated with the gavroche. So, very rich. You can always have it in a half portion. So,
okay.
Because obviously tastes are changing and people don't eat so much cream or butter and everything. Before, many years ago, it used to be served as two per portion, which is a very big portion. I couldn't eat two, definitely. But something like that is something that's... yeah, very associated with the gavroche. But everything is, it's French classic, but it's lighter than time gone by. So I think there's something for everyone. If you want to eat light, you can. And if you want to really go out all guns blazing, it's...
I can see you could do yourself in very well
yes.
with all these really wonderful things.
It's curious. We saved it till last, didn't we? So we're expecting airline food tomorrow. so we probably will... have a good time this evening, would be my guess.
Hopefully, yes.
One question here is, what is a bath chap?
It's the jowl from the pig's head.
Oh, be darned. I never heard it called that.
Yeah, there's...
It's like guanciale.
It's a
pig's jowl.
It's English terminology for...
You know, this is something that's old English, but it's newly revisited as the... Fergus Henderson style,
yes.
nose to tail.
Yes.
This is the assiette of pork, the pork chop, the jowls, belly, and crispy ear, with a gratin of creamy mash, parsnip, and sep mushroom. So that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's obviously the French are renowned for their use of the pig and using all the parts of it, so... yeah, that's a sort of friendship.
You sell a lot of that?
Yes, yeah. It's good. People, I think now, like you say, people are more aware of using, of not just having a specific cut of meat and actually going for the different, something like that would give you different tastes and different textures, but, and using the whole animal is very important for sort of productivity and to respect the animal if you're going to eat meat. That's definitely a thing I think is important.
Right.
And people are much more receptive.
Well, I'm looking forward to a wonderful evening, as Peter said.
You know, let's take the mystery of the location away.
Okay.
This restaurant is so incredibly discreet. We're down here, I guess you would call it an English, in the US they call it an English basement.
Yes. Basement.
Down the stairs from a raised ground floor. The landmark you want, if you're an American, because you'll be looking for it anyways, the Franklin Delano Roosevelt in Grosvenor Square.
Roosevelt, because only Republicans say Roosevelt.
Okay, if you followed his right hand and then went just a little behind him, almost on the corner of Grosvenor Square and Upper Brook Street, you'll find a very discreet doorway that says Le Gavroche. I don't think it even says it's a restaurant.
No, it's very small canapé. But yeah, the American Embassy is the thing to find, and then from Grosvenor Square, someone definitely point you in the right direction.
Well, Franklin can do that.
Exactly.
He's permanently there. He's permanently there. He knows the way. So what a delight. Now, there's another person that I wanted to ask you about, because we were talking earlier about ladies in the kitchen. We told someone we were coming to Le Gavroche, and they said, are you going to meet that lady from New Zealand? You have a sous chef.
Who is a
very native New Zealander and a big time All Blacks.
Yes.
Rugby football fan.
Definitely.
What's her name?
Monica. Monica, yes.
So be sure to say hello to Monica. We bring her regards from someone whose name I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
But it's someone who also loves rugby.
Yes. He's a sous chef here, so.
Well, thank you so much. And I better pack up here so you can go to work.
Right. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rachel. That was great.
Thank you.
And now another short break, but join us on the other side for Mon Plaisir.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, I must say that there was a little bit of surrealism involved with being in this place. It sort of plucked out of the blue, out of time, Mon Plaisir. And I loved all the vintage adverts and so forth. And I loved the plaster and horsehair Michelin man. But it really was like being in a different era, except when you were brought back to reality with probably the best French fries that I've had in years.
There you go. So if you're into steak tartare and French fries
and
traditional things from France, this is sure is a place you can go get it, and the atmosphere will have you thinking you're in Paris except for the language. So first of all, Chef Frank Raymond, and then the owner, whose last name I won't try to pronounce, but his first name was Alain. So back-to-back, first chef and then Alain.
Mon Plaisir, my pleasure, and it's the name of a restaurant, the oldest restaurant, French restaurant in London. And we're going to be talking, that it will be our pleasure, to Chef Franck Raymond. Welcome to On the Menu, Chef.
Good evening.
Now, would I say that this restaurant is the oldest French restaurant in London? That puts it about, when was it founded?
I think it's 1942, just before the Second World War.
Aha. Uh-huh. And, you know, you're not old enough to have been here that long.
I'm not old enough. Even if I have some white hairs, I'm not old enough.
Now, you are French-born and Swiss-raised.
Yes.
But classically French-trained.
Classical French-trained.
Right. And this restaurant, its core is classical French recipes.
It is.
Now, what are some of the signature dishes?
So the signature dishes, it's the steak tartare. We find, if you came like 30 years ago, you can find steak tartare on the menu. Onion soup, French onion soup, and escargot, cassolette d'escargot, uh-huh. The classic French.
Now, but you said you added some modern twists. Tell me the story about how came to London, and with all the knowledge of the French tradition, but you realized there were all these other cuisines.
Yeah, when I arrived more than 10 years ago, just French food. And sorry to say that, but French people think the best food in the world is French, but it's not true. It's only I discover a lot Italian food. It's amazing, but for me before Italian food it was just pizza and pasta. I discover some Spanish food. For me, Spain before it was just paella and sangria and nothing else. But I realize it's a lot of things, a beautiful thing. Like if you go to Greece, you got a nice product. Even in England, the food is amazing. And even now, if I'm back in France, they say, oh, you know, you eat this jelly, green jelly, or I say, come on, yeah. But I think in France we need to wake up because we live with the past, not with the future at the moment on the gastronomy.
What was the name of that book that we liked so much?
Au revoir all that.
This was written by an American food journalist, worried about what was happening to his favorite country for food and wine, but realizing that other nations were passing it by.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think we really need to wake up in France. It's not about high cuisine. It's like high haute couture as well. They don't need to worry. It's about the bistro, brasserie. We don't eat very well now in France. I'm talking about bistro, brasserie, and small restaurant.
But you did let us into a little secret that your inspiration in cooking
was
a very famous French chef. Perhaps you can share that.
Yeah, Marc Ferrat, yeah.
And you said you ate there 18 courses, and how many years ago?
More than 20 years.
And you still remember every dish?
Give me a time, I can write all the menu I have on this night.
So,
definitely.
So there's still the possibility of getting some inspiration
from your country.
Now, what
definitely.
What was it about Marc Ferrat? He's influenced so many chefs. What particularly did you take away from him as an influence?
The food was really simple. The flavor I had in this night, it was the same flavor I had in the soup of my grandmother, but this flavor in a high cuisine, in a high standard restaurant. But the flavor, I remember the galette of potatoes with salmon. It was the same flavor of the soup of my grandmother. Bring back me on 20 years ago. That's amazing.
Now, you said that you added these twists. What are some of the dishes that you added twists to on this menu?
We have the ravioli de Royan. It's tiny, tiny ravioli from France. And we serve with cep velouté, really light cep velouté, some ham, and cream of herbs.
And any others?
What we have, the perdreau is partridge in English. The perdreau we serve on a salad.
And that's a very Spanish dish, right, I guess?
No, it's French.
It's French too.
So the perdreau we serve with the marinated foie gras, apple compote, red cabbage salad, and the jus.
Right.
Now, what's it like to be a French restaurant in London right now? When we were talking before we started the interview, I said that when I lived in London in the early 1960s, the only food that was worth eating in London was French, and there were many French restaurants. And the same was true of New York. Now, in New York, French restaurants have gone away, have almost disappeared. Has the same thing happened in London?
It's still many French, French restaurants in London, and but got a lot of competition. Got a lot of Italian, a lot of English restaurants, really nice English restaurants.
Modern Englishes,
Indian,
Southeast Asian, everything.
So it's a lot of competition at the moment.
So who comes here?
I think we have 70% of English people.
English,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And a tiny amount of French people.
Now, do you travel? You probably don't have much time.
I travel a lot.
Oh, where do you go?
Yes.
Where
I
do
love
you go?
Travel. I try to go everywhere. Now, South America a lot.
Where in South America?
Last time I was in Peru.
Peru. Oh, that's interesting cuisine, is it not?
Yeah, I was amazed about the food. Yeah. My main worry is because I don't know nothing about Peru.
Yeah, I used to think it was all potatoes, but it's not.
But my main worry is about food. And when I arrived there, it was a big surprise. It was simple restaurant. I have ceviche. It was
fabulous.
Wow, fabulous. Yeah, even the potato.
You can't bring any of those recipes back.
Oh, you can. Yeah, you can bring something. Uh-huh. Of course, I can. I take
and
some.
Do you put those on your menu?
Yeah, I put some ceviche with a twist again. Uh-huh. I put the ceviche on this summer on the menu.
Yeah. And do you go New York?
Yeah, I've been in New York.
And what are your favorite restaurants in New York?
Babu. Babu is beautiful restaurant. Babu, for the oyster, I like to Aqua Grill in Spring Street. Otherwise, Gramercy Tavern.
Oh, Gramercy Tavern.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
Oh, isn't he a wonderful chef, Michael Anthony?
And my most disappointed restaurant in New York, just French restaurant.
What was?
It was Jean-Georges.
Oh, you didn't like Jean-Georges?
No, it was probably bad night, but...
Yeah, because he can be very good. Yeah.
Now, he's coming to London very soon, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's opening in London.
That's all we heard. But isn't it a spice market?
Yes, so it's bringing the spice market.
So it's not his traditional now. Have you had a chance to go to Daniel Ballou's place?
No, I've been in London. Because you have a restaurant in
London. Have you been to that one?
Yeah.
We're going there on Tuesday.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, we've been to all of his restaurants.
The terrine are beautiful. Nice, I really like it.
Well, his charcuterie guy is from Paris, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and he says his wine list is dedicated to the fact that he's from Lyon.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's serving wines of the Northern Rhone, and his wine menu is dedicated to that. Now, you have a similar, shall we call it a prejudice or a preference in your wine list?
Let's call it a preference.
Yeah, no, we have mix of wine of France. So we've got Alsace, Savoie, South of France, Bordeaux, Bourgogne, Loire Valley.
So you're going to some of the...
Yeah.
Not less traditional, traditionally celebrated around the world kinds of sources of wine.
But all French labels.
French label. Yeah.
You import a lot of product from France, do you not?
Yes. Almost, I can say 70% is French product.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so easy to get now. Right?
Yeah. And now it's, there was, with the pound against and the euro, you have no point to go every week anymore in France. But a few years ago, we go with Mr. Lem, with my boss. We go every week in France. We take the van, choose a product.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's so easy to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can just drive over there and
so we
drive
bring
back
the
again.
Cheese, we bring the wine, some food, and it was beautiful. But at the moment, you have no point because the pound is a little bit a week.
Now, have you tried out some of the more experimental Spanish chefs? You should have eaten the Basque country. Set you on your heels.
Yeah, no, I never tried this food.
But they all say that the inspiration for them, the first generation, was Paul Bocuse anyway.
Definitely. Anyway, we need, even if we call molecular gastronomy, you need some classic root. Otherwise, you can't do anything.
The reason I mentioned Basque is because they were freed by the whole cuisine, Nouvelle Cuisine, but they always go back to their roots.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's good flavors. Now, what are we going to eat this evening?
I can suggest you the raviol.
Uh-huh.
The raviol. A twist with that's a nice twist, it's carpaccio of tuna with classic passion fruit vinaigrette.
Oh, I love passion fruit.
Passion fruit vinaigrette. On the main course, you can have the duck.
Okay.
And on the special tonight, we have the fillet of venison.
Oh, that sounds good.
With the dry fruits.
Now, that's not French venison.
Yeah, it's French.
It's French venison. Yeah. Oops, we better whisper that.
Yeah.
All you dear in England are safe.
Chevreuil.
But you do like a dorade, but it's a fillet. It's not a whole dorade.
Yeah, no.
So, and I'm sure that here you have all these French cheeses.
Yeah.
Now, that's a treat.
We have amazing cheese tray.
Wow.
So you can't miss the cheese as well.
Sounds good to me.
Well, wasn't it? Now, General de Gaulle was an early customer of this.
Yeah, so the General de Gaulle came during the Second World War to do this meeting as well in Montplaisir.
Well, he was running the war after all, according to him.
Yeah.
But I heard once he was quoted after he became president of France. Later, he said, "How can you govern a country that has 400 cheeses?"
Exactly.
And I think he underestimated the number because I think there are far more than that.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
Well, let's give them the website, people who are listening that might want to come and sample your food. It's www.monplaisir.uk.
.co.uk.
Oh, .co, I forgot the code. .co.uk.
And this is on a tiny little street that I'm not really sure you're supposed to drive down, called Monmouth Street.
Yeah.
But at one end of Monmouth Street is a very famous intersection called Seven Dials.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is a charming part of London to explore. Covent Garden, the Central Market, all the shopping around that area as well. And then a historic location called Seven Dials, and then just head on Monmouth Street just a few blocks. And they open early for dinner. We're going to be getting in the way soon because I think some guests already arrived.
And it's a charming place, and you couldn't get more traditional French than the atmosphere.
No, I don't think we can find something like that in London.
Right. Well, thank you again, Chef. I look forward to your menu. Ta-ta! We now have the boss, the owner of Mon Plaisir, whose name is...
Alain L'Ermite.
Tell us, no apostrophe, because you
no apostrophe. It's not Le Hermit, it's L'Ermite.
L'Ermite.
In one word.
And Alain, you bought this when, this restaurant?
I bought the restaurant in 1972.
Okay, that was our first question. And our second question is, why? Were you always a restaurateur?
Well, I'd been working, in small restaurants around London. In fact, I came to England to be a Formula One driver.
Oh, who is that one that our friend worked for?
Sterling Moss. Oh, yes. He was my star when I came to England. I did some lessons, but you must know, to be a Formula One driver, you need the money afterwards. I used to drive every Sunday, and then I couldn't, so I stayed in England. The only way I could find some work was in restaurants, so I worked in different restaurants. In the end, an employment agency, which was a private person, told me, I've got some friends who want to sell their business. Are you interested? Well, I said, yes, I might. And I came to work. But again, we're talking finance and banks. I worked here for 9 months. My bank was supposed to give me an answer within a month or something like that. 9 months later, I still didn't have an answer. The proprietor of Mon Plaisir just said, you disappear. We're closing for the summer as they used to for a month. We don't want to see you anymore. So I had to find other jobs, but I knew it was an interesting restaurant, and I kept looking for the money from August to December, and I managed to find a bank which would lend me the money.
Wow.
So I found the private address of the owner of the restaurant. She said, I never want to see you again. But I arrived at their private address on a Saturday morning. I rang the bell. She opened the door and she said, I told you, I didn't want to see you anymore. I said, I've got the money. All right, come in then. And that's how it started.
And that was almost 50 years ago?
Yes. That was 1972.
So you'll be celebrating 50 years.
Yes.
Quite soon. You expect to do that?
50 years of me being there. They were there since 1942.
Right. Okay.
And I know the story because a lady came about 5 years ago, was sitting in the front of the restaurant. She calls me and she says, you know, I told my dad I was going to have lunch at Mon Plaisir in Covent Garden. And the dad said, what? Mon Plaisir? It still exists. And she said, yes. He said, I used to go to Mon Plaisir in 1942 to have meeting with Charles de Gaulle about the French resistance. And I'm not inventing the story, but it's a true story.
Now, what has changed? That London restaurant scene has changed a lot since 1972.
Yes,
have you adapted at all, or have you made a point of staying the same?
Well, obviously you need to adapt. In fact, funny you ask this question. Some customers who've been coming I've had for 40 years just tell me, Well, you've upgraded. You couldn't have a Mont Plaisir the way it was 40 or 50 years ago. Believe you me, if you look at the pictures, etc., you need to be updated. Well, sometimes you can only update yourself with a chef, yes. But it's difficult, you know.
So we can't say we're talking behind chef's back because he's standing right behind you.
You must be very careful.
What is it that Chef Raymond has brought that was part of your continued success?
No, he's, let's face it, he's a very good chef. He's worked in star restaurants, etc. And everything here, and that's why. But lots, Mon Plaisir has been here for so long to change. People appreciate, yes, it's good, but lots of people don't appreciate the difference between fresh sauce made with a fond, which is made with the bones boiling for 48 hours, 68, and buying some cubes and just making sauce like that. The only difference, if you compare France with England, is that in France you employ somebody, he costs you X, you pay him X, he costs you X multiplied by 2, and that's why, unless you're talking star restaurant, Michelin stars, in France they can't afford to do what is done in England in a restaurant like ours, where you've got staff which does everything is made on the side. Rather than buy a soup, you take soups. I eat soups all the time because they're so fantastic. It's not the soup and the chips. Again, as well, in France, 99%, or maybe not 99, but at least 95% of the time, the chips are frozen chips. Here, the chips, we get the potatoes, we peel the potatoes, we cut them, we blanch them, and then they cook before sunning, and those things are little difference. The big difference is that lots of people can't see the difference between McDonald's chips and Mon Plaisir chips, but what is good is that you get people who know the difference, and that's why we're still busy a bit.
Chef said that if we enjoy talking to Raymond Blanc, who must be someone you know well, we would enjoy talking to you, and we have. that you both have the same passion and energy for what you're doing. After all the years, both of you have been doing this, and it's such a pleasure.
Yeah, but you know, as an old man, I'm pretty quiet.
We can see that.
That's the story.
A shy, retiring Frenchman in charge of a wonderful little restaurant, a gem of a restaurant in a wonderful area of London.
But chef, I'm much quieter than the chef.
Alain, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We better let you get down to business, and we better get down to business too. Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it. Until next week, when we'll be back in London again, bringing you more dining adventures. So don't forget to join us then. We look forward to seeing you. And in the meantime,
bye bye.